My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. So in today's episode, I'm going to be talking about three ways that love addicts can sabotage relationships without knowing. So we're going to talk about the ways that you might, per love addiction, be pushing a little bit too much of the boundaries and crossing the line from asking for what you're needing, asking for what you're wanting, and being a little bit more codependent, perhaps. So we're going to jump into all three of those today. If you are currently in a relationship where this is an issue, there's always time, there's always space for you to change that pattern. And remember that you're changing these patterns not for the other person, not that the other person can like you more or be more available for you, but for you to like yourself. Because at the core of love addiction and the core of a lot of these intimacy disorders, but especially love addiction, it is that core fear of being either too much or not enough. So that fear of rejection, the fear of abandonment, but you're the one who holds on to that feeling. So you take that feeling everywhere you go. So a lot of times as love addicts, we think that if we can get the other person to love us, to choose us, to fix the relationship, that is going to rectify the wound that is on the inside, but it starts with us. And so just know that by you working on yourself, everything else around you gets to change as well. So I'm kind of already digging into one of the first points. So just know that if these are the things that you want to hear about, if love addiction, love avoidance, love deprivation, because they're all interconnected. But if this way, if you have a pattern of sabotaging relationships and feeling as if you're doing a little bit too much, this episode is for you. So let's go ahead and jump on in.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
Okay, so I have a question for you. On a scale of 0 to 5, where 0 is I don't think about it at all, and 5 is I'm fully connected, how on top of your hormone health are you? If you said 0 to 1, it is time to build that connection. Your hormones and your cycle are central to your overall functioning, and regulating your body will completely transform your mental, emotional, and physical health. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And even though it helps for more than just menopause, Hormone Harmony is great for any horrible menopausal symptoms that put a woman's life on hold, like hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts, low mood, poor sleep, feeling tired all the time, bloating and gas, lower sexual desire. Hormone Harmony can help with all of those things. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code BGH at checkout. Okay, so I'm going to jump right into the first thing that love addicts can do when it comes to sabotaging relationships, and it is projecting your insecurities onto the other person. I kind of already said this in the intro, but it's when you feel really bad about yourself and you make up in your mind that this person feels bad about or doesn't like this part of you as well. So if you have a problem with using your voice, expressing what you need, asking for what you want, you're going to make up in your mind that your partner or your mother or your friends or your family or whoever it may be be, you're going to make up that everybody gets mad at you when you ask for what you want, that everyone thinks that you're annoying, that everyone thinks that you're a burden, whatever it may be, because that's your own personal insecurities. If you think that you're not good enough in a relationship and that there's someone better for your partner, whether or not that better is based on someone who has a different body shape than you do, or has a different presentation, just the way that they look and the way they carry themselves in the world. If you think that someone who has a certain talent is better than you, or people who are further along in their careers, people who have more money. I remember even hearing Viola Davis talking about in an interview when she met her now husband that she's been with for a long time, she thought that her credit score was a disqualifier. And it was one of the things that she apologized for when they were first talking and getting very serious and saying, these are things that you need to know about me, just fully expecting for this man to run the other way, right? And so we can project our own insecurities and the things that we think are rejectable and put it onto other folks and anticipate them to run from us. Here's the thing about not solving these negative core wounds and these ways that we feel as if we're not good enough. You would think that once you get into a relationship who accepts, or a person that accepts these things or accepts you in spite of these things, you think that you would feel whole and full on the inside. You think that this would heal all of those internal rejection wounds, but that's not what it does. What it actually does is it kicks them into overdrive. So if anything, what happens, and many of you who've either you're currently in a healthy relationship or you've been in one, or been in one in the past, you know that when you are faced with someone who is saying, hey, these are the things that I really love about you and I love you, your anxiety goes into overdrive because you're like, no, I don't believe you, not me. You might start to try to test them a little bit. You can try to create a dark night of the soul where you're trying to figure out what's real and what's not real. That sense of feeling not good enough or too much or like a burden or wherever the core wound for you is, that even comes into overdrive, because then you start to feel bad that you feel bad. And then you may start to want to apologize to this person for feeling so bad about yourself. And this person doesn't need all that. And so there's a balance between your partner, God willing, if you pick someone who is healthy and available, this person is a safe space for you to talk to and share your feelings and your thoughts with, but they are not your healer. They're not your healer. They're not your therapist. They're not your caseworker. They are not the person who can transform you. So they might be able to listen to what's going on, but you got to go and do the healing work on the other side. You have to go and figure out, okay, this is the root of where this came from. This is why I feel this way. What am I going to do about it? How am I going to get this out of me? How am I going to change my beliefs? And if you're having a hard time doing that, right, you're in a really great relationship with someone who really loves you and shows up for you, and you still keep tripping over yourself, you still keep projecting these insecurities and getting mad at them about things that they have not said, things they have not done, which is part of the presentation. So it's not just, well, let me finish. When you are in this really great partnership where there's no amount of validation, support, fidelity, loyalty that this person can give you that's going to make you feel safe, then you're the common denominator, and you need to go and work on that, and you need to be the one who figures that out. And if you've been trying to do it on your own and you keep hitting these walls and you still keep feeling very embarrassed and you still keep feeling as if you're pushing this person away because you can't trust the love that they're giving you, this is where it's time for you to do that internal work. This is that sweet spot where it comes for you to mix the trauma work and the skill development to actually change the cycle that you're going through, because many of us know where our trauma wounds are. We know that we may feel bad because of what happened with dad, what happened with mom, what didn't happen with dad, what didn't happen with mom, maybe things that happened with our peers. But also what's really key about this too is sometimes you don't know what you don't know, which is why what the problem you keep trying to fix isn't actually working. So there are a lot of people who I've worked with who come to me and they think that what they're dealing with is father wounds. My father was never there. He was always busy. He was an alcoholic. And so that's why it's really hard for me to trust people. And so she's been looking at this whole time, trying to be on the lookout for people who are acting like, talking like, presenting like her father. Come to find out, once we start working together, she figures out, wait, My mother was always present, but she was low-key depressed all the time, and she was very emotionally withdrawn, and I actually felt like I had to take care of her all the time, and I wasn't allowed to really have my emotions because it would really trigger her, and then I had to take care of other people too. So I think that might be where my tendency to minimize my thoughts and my feelings comes from because of this unconnected trauma, right? And so having that outside support, y'all, when you are feeling stuck is really, 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 really important. It is the difference between you struggling with something for years and reinforcing this belief that there's something wrong with you, that you can't get it right, that you are the problem, to, oh, wow, there is an actual reason for this. And that means that there's a way out. That's one of the things that people would always say to me, especially when I first started BGH, Black Girls Heal, the podcast and everything, talking about love addiction, because we had all these very high functioning, smart, capable women who kept hitting the same relationship issues. And so they would go to these panels and they would go to these talks and they would read these books. But people who would just say, well, you just got to do this better. You just got to love yourself better. You just got to make a commitment to yourself. You got to get your list together and then everything is going to be better. But that's not what this is. We're talking about a real life trauma response. There's a real life diagnosis, whether or not it's in the DSM officially or not. This is a very predictable pattern that all of us who listen to this podcast can relate to. And so having that label, having a name for what's going on versus just them being the problem is so freeing, right? And so it's the same thing when it comes to these consistent problems that you may be having in partnerships. Having real identification about what your core patterns are and what's actually happening is empowering. It helps you move out of, well, I hope this works out. I hope that these next steps that I'm taking with these people is the right decision. I hope that I can trust myself and that this won't blow up in my face too. Okay, I know what this is, and this is an opportunity for me to make a different decision. And it's hard, but I'm going to do it. So going back to, we're still on point number one, going back to projecting your insecurities onto other people, what happens when your anxiety is kicking up and everything, and you're starting to, there's a couple of things that can happen. One of those is what I already mentioned. You start to apologize for being too much, for being so insecure. Sorry for getting in the way. If that's part of how your trauma presented, you can start to test them. And l either look for ways that they are abandoning you and rejecting you if they're not doing it all full out the way you want them to, or create those ways. So it is not uncommon for someone who is in a relationship with someone who says they love them, especially if I'll give an example. If your insecurity is around body image, feeling pretty enough, feeling enough physical wise, you might start to pick fights and say, well, do you think that this person is prettier? I bet you like her more. Wanting to go through people's phones, wanting to, looking at them when anyone attractive walks by. And when they don't look at them, you're like, I bet you wanted to look at her. Like nothing they do is enough. Right? Because you're totally projecting the fact that you feel inferior onto this other person. And so, no matter how much they praise you, adore you, celebrate you, show you off to other people, you're the one who feels as if you are failing in this area. So, you got to be the one who fixes it. Otherwise, no matter who you're with, no matter how great they treat you, is never going to be enough. And going back to what I was saying about doing this now, this is the difference between when you get support with these things now, it's the difference between you telling yourself you're smart enough to do this. This is just temporary. I got it. I'm going to just be really mindful of this. I'm going to make sure I journal and stay on top of it. And then 6 months to a year later, you're still in the exact same position. And it's not because you didn't try your best. It's not because you weren't putting all the tools and things out there that people told you to put out there and that you weren't being a good student. It is when you actually have a skill gap that you're not even aware of what the skill gap is, what it looks like, and how to create it. And what I talk about with my students all the time, and if you've ever come to any workshops or places where I talk about this, we can have all the tools in front of us, but we will not do the tools if there's any fear that we have that we're not worthy of it, if we are trying to protect ourselves from being disappointed. So, what if I get everything I want and then it's taken away from me? What if I get everything I want and then people find out that I'm really not as good enough as I thought I was? What if I get everything I want and then I get cancer and pass away? we all have these really real upper limit problems that are totally produced because we've gone through so much trauma and so many times that we put out hope and we tried and we wanted the best and we were vulnerable to it and it didn't work out the way that we wanted it to. And so now our mind, our brain, our body has these built-in mechanisms to keep us from doing the things that we need to change our life. So whether or not I'll even take it out of relationships, whether or not it's when it comes to food, and you know, maybe there are some of us, and I'm speaking here for myself, and I'm actually going to do some personal work on this when I'm done with this podcast episode, because I'm realizing that I have my own upper limits. But many of us already know exactly what we need to do when it comes to changing our food intake if you're dealing with some somatic physical issues. I'm at the place where I know. If I change my diet, that some things are going to change for me, or maybe a lot of things will change for me. But there is a fear of the unknown for me. There's a fear of the unknown. There's a fear that it won't work for me. There's a fear of what if I do this and I'm still sick on the other side. So it's still, and I'm not sick. I shouldn't say sick. I'm working through some fatigue and some other issues that are still here that I know is based on this extreme sugar addiction. What if I change this and I start to miss these lemon sugar cookies that I eat all the time? For those of you who are in Texas and you're familiar with Tiff's Treats, they know me. I know the manager's names. I know about their surgeries. I know about their kids. Like it is an issue, right? So, and it's also one of the ways that I have coped, but I've also had times when I have breaks from that and I have felt better. I've lost weight immediately. And so there's so many thoughts, you know, am I ever going to be able to enjoy life again? And all these things that may sound silly to some, but it's a real, real way that I might sabotage doing exactly what I want to do or procrastinate doing it or do it half-assed because then I still feel like I have some control over it. And if the failure comes, it's not me. And then also coming to a place, I don't do this anymore. But it's really easy to find any voice in the world that will validate wherever you are. Whatever it is that you want, you will easily find an audience of people who are going to tell you that you're right. So whether or not I want to find an audience of people who are like, Sheena, this is about commitment, this is about self-discipline, this is about changing, I know exactly where to go to find those people. If I want to hear from people who are like, Sheena, you only live once, YOLO, live your life, a little cookie ain't going to hurt you, I know exactly where to go to find those people. If I want to find the group of people who are like, okay, life is about a hybrid approach. It's not about you living in restriction and stuff, but also finding balance. I know exactly where I can go to find those people. You can find for whatever you're dealing with, when you're ready to find change and you decide to choose what it is that you want to change in, you can find your audience. You can find your crew, right? You can find your own echo chamber. And so it's really about you deciding and making that decision. And if you're having an upper limit problem, you got to get around the people who have gone through it and who have worked through it and who are going to hold you accountable to do better. That is what the recovery school is for me. That is how I help women recover from love addiction and love avoidance and love deprivation, to be there, to be that truth teller for you, to also help you connect the dots and to lead your way out of it. But you need to find that support so that you can save time, energy, and heartbreak and actually move towards the relationships you want versus away.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's take a quick break to say thanks to this week's sponsors.
As our country continues to grow and make new meaning of the intersection between current and historical events, it is so important to stay connected to the voices and the leaders who are influencing what progress, connection, equality, and truth mean to us as Black people. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection from some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths on NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. The second thing that love addicts do to sabotage their relationships often is giving up their lives for the coupleship. Giving up their lives for the coupleship. So this is where you slowly stop doing the things that you used to do in order to be available to your partner. So you slowly stop doing your morning routine if you're a morning routine person, which is something that I'm saying that straight out because that's something that I've had to work through, you know, especially if I'm staying the night at a partner's house or something like that, or the evening goes late. It's very easy to just spend some extra time cuddling in bed. But I'm doing that one straight off from the beginning, because your relationship with yourself is your most important relationship. Depending on how you feel about yourself, how you're nurturing yourself, how you're giving love to yourself, if you slowly start to make this relationship be the replacement for that, you start to lose your, the word I want to say is independence. And I give pause to that because I know when it comes to those who are working through love avoidance, that's one of your biggest fears, right? It's interesting because it's one of your biggest fears to become overwhelmed by someone and to lose your power. But also you recognize that this is a way that you have kept yourself safe by pushing people away. So you know you need to work on it. You know you need to become more interdependent, but not too much. Like, don't get crazy. And so what happens when you start to exchange the ways that you get love, connection, social care, affection from the other people in your life and your other activities, and that person becomes your only source, you do create an unhealthy dependence on it. And that when things are wrong with y'all, or if they are not giving it to you in the exact way that you want, in the exact moment that you want, it is very easy to go from a place where, oh, well, people have off days and, you know, it's okay. They don't need to be here all the time. I don't need them, to now I do need them. And what's up? Because you're not hugging me the way you usually hug me, or you gave me a compliment, but you didn't brush my hair off my face when you said it, or, you know, you didn't compliment me today, because they become your source for affirmation, validation, support, and affection. So your morning routine, if you're a morning routine person like I am, that's how I get centered. That's how I get grounded, is where I connect to God, is where I connect to my spirit, is where I connect to getting myself grounded for the day. It is how I feel the most elevated. And so I'm at the place now where I got to do my morning routine or everyone's going to pay. And partners know that. Partners know that if I'm not doing my stretching and meditating, then good luck to you if we are in contact today, because I need it. And so that is one example for me, but also your hobbies, y'all, the things you do with your friends. If you are en route to finding and building friendships, this is often a common roadblock that happens when I'm working with women. It doesn't look like a roadblock. But we start working together to break these patterns of love addiction and love avoidance. Things get better. They start to feel more confident. They start to feel more grounded. They get clarity. They've forgiven themselves for mistakes that they've happened. They've started to identify that these relationships or the people within the relationships were their problem and not them. They're letting go of these codependent patterns, right? So they're feeling bright and shiny and brand new. And they're also building relationships. They are either going deeper in their current relationships or building new relationships. And as they are doing this, there is a new person. There's always a new potential love interest that comes right on in. And because they're still working through their love addiction and they haven't fully changed all of their patterns, it is so easy for them to shift from one week it's, yeah, I'm hanging out with this new girl who's a friend of mine, and like I'm really connecting to her, and I really think that we can build a really great friendship, and I actually had a really good time with her. I'm happy that I followed up with her. I'm feeling really excited about that. And then the next week is there's a boy, or there's another woman. that for a romantic interest, and now all the focus on trying to get to know this person and figure out who they are and what they want is now on this person, and that relationship becomes a priority. And that's fine because this is, I mean, either way, you're going to have to figure out what your balance is. You're going to have to figure out, we have to break the cycle that some of us do, which is going into our isolation bubble whenever we feel like we've made a mistake. So I've gone through a relationship where I made a whole lot of issues, made a whole lot of problems, had a whole lot of issues. I'm feeling regretful about it. I know I need to heal myself. So I go into a 3 to 6 month, if not longer, bubble of isolation where I heal myself. You can't see the air quotes where I heal myself. But in that bubble, I'm not really learning how to fully be myself while also connecting to other people. So it reinforces this notion that you have to choose. Either I can be in relationship with me or be in relationship with other people, but either way, I have to abandon one or the other. And I believe, and I know that life is about having a hybrid. It's about using relationships as a mirror to reflect things back to you, but not ever idolizing and worshiping and deifying the person in the relationship to being your one and only thing. And even then, when you are in a really healthy relationship with someone, that is a reflection of you. You're in a healthy relationship because of how much you love yourself, because of how much you show up for yourself, because of how much you know how to receive love from other people and what you think you're worthy of. And you're also able to mutually give to the other person because when you're in a relationship, that person is not on your romantic, emotional payroll to go and serve you, right? A relationship is bi-directional. That person is giving energy, love, connection to you, and you're also giving love and energy and connection to them as well. And so when you're a healthy person and you are balanced, you're able to give to both. You're able to give to yourself and give to the other person without neglecting yourself and abandoning yourself while also not pushing them away and abandoning them and being avoidant is what it looks like when you're in those types of relationships and you're unbalanced, but you're really focused on yourself. When you're fully in your avoidance and you're in a partnership, it looks like you start to get very resentful that they're asking of time of you, that they're asking to for you to compromise on some things because you see it as them encroaching on you and trying to take your boundaries versus this is someone who wants to connect to you. Invulnerability is not the same as narcissistic abuse and depletion. And sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. So that even highlights the same point that if you are more prone to give up your life for a coupleship, you are very, very vulnerable to narcissists who are the kings and queens of love bombing. They are the kings and queens. They are always available to spend time with you. They are the first ones to move their schedules around. They're the first ones to hype you up. They're great at planning dates. They're great at talking to you on the phone for hours. You know, maybe you're with a vulnerable narcissist, which I had an episode about that. I think it was an episode. I don't think it was a YouTube live. But I had an episode where I talked about vulnerable narcissism where I was talking about the secret way of love bombing. And so if you're not with a more grandiose or overt narcissist who's going to love bomb you in those traditional ways, you will be love bombed by the vulnerable narcissist who's there to listen to you and to spend time with you and to share all their heartbreaking stories with you and give you all the emotional connection that you want, that you feel like you've been missing, right? And also let you solve some problems for them. But what needs to happen as a love addict is you need to be able to be able to be, need to be able to be able to. You need to be able to be available to, yes, pour into this partnership, be available for dates, talk to them on the phone, build trust, and, you know, even your own little routine as you grow into your coupleship, but not at the sake of losing what gives you life, what gives you life spiritually, socially, mentally, emotionally, the things that make you you. And it's very easy for love addicts to fully throw it out the window altogether or slowly let it drift apart, drift away until this person becomes their everything. And I'll be the first to say, having a person that you can, even me and my extroverted self, having a person that you can kind of check out with and do the Friday night cuddles with, and whether or not it's a movie night or just y'all read or y'all disassociate on your phones or play video games. I don't know what it is. You know, y'all know I'm a nerd. So those are kind of my go-tos when it comes to numbing out activities with person when we're doing an at-home date. But that's really all well and good. But it's really hard when that person becomes your only friend Because then you're very dependent on that friendship being perfect all the time. And that is the only relationship that is mirroring back to you all the things that you're working on. So that becomes your only playground for you to work through all the things in life that you're here to clear out and to detox from and to reorient your beliefs around. And you don't really have the friendships anymore to reflect that onto because you've stopped hanging out with them and you've stopped connecting with them. And also you start to kind of deify that spending time with this person is so much better than spending time with your friends. And so then you really don't have the buy-in to even spend time with them. And when you do, you're checking the clock and you're looking for your way out. And so being in love is very cozy and is very sweet. And you get enraptured and you fall. You know, that's why we talk about falling in love, right? So there's a part of this, if you are doing it right, that vulnerability does come into play. You're not going to always be 100% in control and measuring everything. This does involve you becoming really allowing yourself to become embodied in this process and letting yourself be fully grounded in it. You got to make sure you have roots in all different places and all different quadrants and corners of your life. And so for my love addicts, what happens is either they are en route to developing these things and they kind of get sidetracked. And then if or when this relationship starts to have some conflicts and issues, then they're trying to find their balance again and they're trying to find their safe space and they're trying to find their confidence. And so we have to go back to what we were doing before. And us doing that, we got to look at, okay, what were the reasons why it was easier for you to try to put power into this relationship? We got to look at where they learned that from. We got to look at what their patterns are, where exactly the slip happened, because they may think it happened at one place or they may not have any clue at all. So we got to figure out where this happened at so that they can be aware in the future. We got to practice some self-forgiveness and shame. If they're still in the relationship, we got to help and empower them to keep moving and to not sabotage it and run because you're expecting them to leave you because you want to leave yourself. And if this is a relationship that has kind of showed itself and showed that it was toxic, then we got to do the process of helping you make decisions for yourself that's actually for your betterment. And so either way, this is a whole lot of work, y'all. If you are a love addict who is already in process of building this, if you are a love addict who already has these things developed, I would really encourage you that it's about you going deeper into these relationships. It's about you really, sometimes what happens with love addicts who already have all the things, you got the friends, you got the hobbies, you got the self-care routine. But you find that when your relationship starts to slip, it's because you have these things, but they're kind of fillers. There's a part of you that feels like this is the life that you're building until you meet your person. And then that's kind of when your real life begins. And then all the stuff that you're building will make more sense and you'll be able to like fully enjoy it because now you have someone to share it with. And I hope you can hear how there's a difference between you're building a life because it's what you love versus you're building a life for someone else. And there's nothing wrong with companionship. This whole podcast, everything I teach is about helping you build and cultivate healthy companionship with yourself, with others, with friends, with family. So we are not anti-companionship. We are anti-unifying a relationship and a person for being your everything. They can mean everything to you. They can be the person that you deeply love and you would sacrifice for. But when you deify someone, you're placing them and their needs and their wants above your own. And as romantic as that may sound from a hopeless romantics, you already know what happens. If you're listening to this as a love addict, you already know what happens when you put someone's needs and wants above your own. You become blind. And you become very blind to the moments when the thing that people are asking you for is actually dangerous and detrimental to you. It's actually not just a normal compromise is actually something that is depleting you of your life force, of your confidence, of your dignity. But you don't see that because when you love someone, you're supposed to be fully out there. You're supposed to give your all. When I love hard. And so if you are someone who is kind of, you're living your life fully, but it's also, I'm here just waiting for this next chapter because then it's going to get better. versus this chapter is really good for me, then you're kind of at risk of these things falling away, because then that person becomes your life. So if they don't fully take to it, if they don't like it, if they're too busy, then you're more easier to let those people and let those hobbies and let those things go, so that you can start to build a life that this person wants you to have, or that you think that this relationship needs you to have, because that's what you've been waiting for this whole time. And then so we got to look at where, when we're working together, this is you. We got to look at getting you more grounded. Sometimes what I see, though, what happens is people kind of have to go through the disappointment phase sometimes, because it's hard to see or believe when you're in that place of kind of putting your life as a placeholder, especially if it's very full, until you get into a relationship and you're like, wait, why am I, one, not feeling as fulfilled as I thought I was going to feel? Why am I, two, getting really triggered and upset when this fantasy that I created in my life is not actually happening with this person, which makes me feel like that means I need to leave, and that's not necessarily what that means. It may mean that you you created a space for a person to come in and fit an impossible standard. Instead of them being your companion and your friend, now they are your savior. Or they are the fixer. And those might be too strong of a word, especially for this type, but it's closer than friend and companion, because there's a responsibility that they have to you. And if you are the love addict that doesn't have any of these things, you don't really have friends that you can trust, you don't really have hobbies, you don't really know who you are and what you like, then you're very much at risk of kind of getting very sad and very depressed and very low in between relationships, or when a relationship breaks up. It can be very easy for you to become a serial monogamist so that you can have a person or a relationship to fixate on. A serial monogamist is not someone who's necessarily in official relationships. This could be someone who's constantly in situationships, constantly has friends. You can't see my air quotes again, but friends, people who she hangs out with, she kicks it with, that she receives dinner and gifts with, that she may even sleep with. But she has some type of romantic connection and intrigue to fill the time and gap, because she doesn't really have much of anything else going on. Men, sex, or women, depending on who she's attracted to, or persons, are her hobby. Relationships are her hobby. Making up and breaking up, finding people to date, going out and looking cute, to be seen, to be chosen, to play games with, to see how much money she can get from this one, to see what happens with this one. That is her hobby. And you got to get more hobbies if that is you. And if you're on the deprivation side, you may not be out there and acting as a serial monogamist, but you go from being in a partnership to being in being in complete deprivation and no affection and no attention and nothing at all. You're in a dry desert for a long period of time, trying to act as if you don't need it. But you're also not building a life that's based on pleasure and connection and things that you want. And so with you, just like with all of these, relationships are a mirror. This isn't just about, oh man, Sheena's putting out there exactly my pattern. This is me. I'm getting called out. Okay, you have the information. You have close to 200 episodes of information where I put things out there. And that doesn't really help you get to the root, though. So the root for this one would be feeling as if you're either not worthy of pleasure and good things, feeling that fear of whether or not things are going to work out for you, not knowing how to receive and get grounded. I've been talking a lot with my clients lately about being in their head a lot and being in the fear of the what ifs, and it being really hard for them to be connected to their body and connected to hope and connected to optimism, because it's scary, right? And so we know this. Now, how do we get there? How do I, when I think I'm taking steps with the tools that I have and it's still not working, okay, so how do I troubleshoot this if I'm doing this on my own, right? And so you can't see what you don't have the vision for, based on your own perspective. Your best perspective has gotten you here. So for the 28th time thus far in this episode, I'm going to say it a few more times. It's really important for you to have help and guidance to help you break this cycle and to not feel silly for asking your help. So that's something too, especially for my folks who may be recovery school alumni. If you're listening to this, just know that this is for you. There is no time limit for the times and moments that you can ask for help. They're for people who love you and support you and are there for you, your mentors, your pastors, your coaches, your therapists, whoever it is. Those people and their love for you they do not have a moment where they're like, okay, you asked me this question 3 times, now we're done. Or I'm tired of hearing about this, I don't want to hear about it anymore. If they do say that, you might need to switch your people, especially when it comes to love addiction and love avoidance, because this is a lifelong issue that you're going to continue to work through and graduate through different levels of. But these people should be safe spaces for you to come when you're stuck. So going back to this special message from our recovery school students that is also for everybody else and the alumni, if you reach a place that you're like, man, I feel like I should know this. Like, why is this so hard? You know, I already worked through this. Maybe I even mastered it before. I celebrated it as a recovery school student, as an alumni. I've moved forward. Why is this coming up again? And feeling embarrassed to talk about it. Then that is nothing but a limiting belief, is nothing but the enemy, is nothing but a projection of having to be perfect, that perfectionism on the inside. Because safe relationships and people who care for you and are here for your good are available for you. You are not getting in the way. You are not a burden. You're not a disappointment. You're not a failure. You're a beautiful human woman who is learning how to do this life. This is your first time here, girl. This is your first time with this storyline. So let's figure it out. Let's figure out what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And that's okay for you to take, for it to take what it needs to take for you to get to the other side. And the last thing that love addicts can do to sabotage their relationships is needing immediate commitment to feel safe. Needing immediate commitment to feel safe. So I know that in my program, when I'm talking with students about dating and stuff, one of the things that I really stress, and I know I've stressed in other episodes, I think I may have left it kind of open, but something that I really, really encourage y'all to do is to really do not think that you're committed to anyone until there's commitment. I don't care how long y'all been talking. I don't care how evolved you are, you being the general you, both of y'all. I don't care how, you know, y'all you've met their parents, you know, you spent the night, y'all met, introduced yourselves to each other's kids. If y'all have kids, you know, you're spending holidays together. None of that matters unless you are in a commitment with someone. None of it matters. Because that person still has the full right and open door to change their mind, to spend time with other people, to date other people. They most likely, if you were doing all those things together, they have most likely told you from the beginning that they're not looking for commitment, or they just want to kill, or they just want to see, and they just want to build together, which is not the same as a commitment. And so you're really setting yourself up for heartbreak and disappointment with someone who is not wanting to lock you down. That's a topic for a different day. Why am I bringing this up here? Because this, in the same token, this point right here is needing immediate commitment to feel safe. And I'm here telling you that you want to make sure you have commitment. The reason why I have this here as a sabotage technique for love addicts is sometimes in our need to make a person be it, and to be done with this whole dating game, and to be done with having to put ourselves out there and really needing that love and connection and relationship to make us feel as if, oh, finally I can rest. I'm in a relationship. I'm safe. I don't have to worry about being abandoned or rejected anymore. I'm done. We can really push someone or something to make this commitment happen, not realizing that the person we're trying to push to be our person is not the best for us. They have some signs of it, but there may be a whole lot of other red flags there. There may be a whole lot of gaps of things that we don't want. But because they're there and they're willing and they're available, we're going to push to make this commitment happen. And we are committing ourselves, our minds, our bodies, our heart, our souls to connecting to something that's going to really either drag us back further, that's going to make us feel depleted at the end, or it's going to be really nice, but because we've done our healing work, it's not going to be enough and we're going to end up having to leave. Right. But we're leaving. I talk a lot about once you start to heal, you start to date a different caliber of people if you're someone who's still single, which is absolutely true. But dating a different caliber of people who are really nice or sweet or strong or dependable, whatever it may be, whatever the thing it is that you want, does not mean that they're your person. it ends up that you can just start dating a whole lot of really nice guys, a lot of nice women, and you get attached because you're trying to make something work. And now you got to grieve letting go of this person that maybe if you would have been a little bit more patient, you would have seen from the beginning was not it, right? You got to grieve the image and the visions and the everything that you built together with them, which still happens. This isn't a toxic breakup. This isn't something that is going to completely destroy you and your sense of worth. God willing, they left you better than they found you, right? Because you're dating different people, people of a different caliber, but you still got to go through the breakup pain. And you still got to learn how to live life without them. And you still got to learn how to either downgrade them to a friend if this is a really great person that you want to cultivate a friendship with and actually be a real friend and not the friend benefits, not cross the line, right? Or you have to remove them from your life and everything that you built together. So this is hard. Right? This is hard when you try to rush to commit to something instead of being more patient about it, without being more thoughtful about it, without you being more grounded about it. And when you're not grounded in yourself, because there's a part of you that thinks that a relationship or a person is going to fix what you have going on the inside. Sometimes you're aware of this and sometimes you're not. Sometimes it takes you being in partnerships to realize, oh shit, that is an insecurity that's coming out that I'm trying to get them to fix and resolve for me. Damn. And it's not until you're in it that you realize it. But if you're outside of it, or it's great to be proactive, but it's about taking your time. So what's the sweet middle ground? This is totally up to you. I know, I have a certain recommendation when I talk with my clients based on what it is that they want, but I'm going to put it up to y'all to figure out what is the longest based on how I described it. If you knew that you going to people's houses, meeting important people in their life, being a full part, you're picking up things for them, they're picking up things for you, they're making you dinner, they're taking your dry cleaning in for you, you got a key to their apartment, all that stuff. None of that means anything if they're if when you ask them, what are we? They're like, well, we're hanging out. We're really good friends. I really care for you. Am I your girlfriend? Am I your partner? Well, we're just, I told you I got a lot of stuff going on. What? I got keys to your place and I'm not your girlfriend? I'm helping you pay some bills depending on your relationship status. I'm helping you pay some bills and we're not partners. I'm picking your kid up from the school and we're not, what in the world is going on? Your partners are calling me to help plan a surprise party for you, and I'm not your girlfriend. There's so much of that reconciliation you'll have to do. So, any of all of those things, or anything else that comes to mind, what's the longest that you would be okay doing those types of things with someone, knowing full out that you're not in a committed relationship and that they are fully free and available to be doing those exact same things with somebody else? Because you are not in a committed relationship. What's the longest you can go dating someone without that type of commitment? And that's your answer. And that's going to vary depending on different people. Some people is very, very short, and some people is very, very long. And so that is up for you to decide. Okay? So that was a lot of things. If this was for you, bookmark this is one of the ones that you're going to keep coming back to. If this is for a friend that needs to hear it because you've heard some things that she's been doing or they've been doing, go ahead and send it to them and tell them that you're going to quiz them at the end to take some notes because we are going to stop putting our love addiction, codependent, trauma stuff into these relationships and expecting to get a different result. We're going to change it. Okay. So for those of you who would like to work together to the Breaking Cycles, the Love Addiction Recovery School. I've added the love addiction part, y'all. I was talking to someone about this. I've called this the recovery school for years now. And I was talking with someone about this as, we're growing the company and the brand. And they're like, what are people recovering from? I'm like, well, this is what I talk about all the time. They're like, you need to put in the name. So the Love Addiction Recovery School is where I help women break these cycles in under 6 months. It is the accelerated process that I have created as a licensed therapist and seeing what works in my therapy practice and also as a coach. and a woman who's gone through her own recovery process. I've done and said and ruminated in every single thing that I talk about here, y'all. I've made every single break that I encourage y'all to do. I've had to transform all of the mindsets. I'm doing all the work before and currently. And so I know exactly what it is to be in your shoes. And I know exactly what it looks like to help women on the other side work through this process. And so in the Love Addiction Recovery School, I help women undergo this process in under 6 months. And so you can learn more by going to therecoveryschool.com, and would love to invite you into this healing process. I stay with my clients for life. This is a lifetime invitation to work with me. And so I look forward to getting to know you and your story. So that's it for now. I'm sending you all so much love, and I will see you in the next one. Take care of yourselves.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.